The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Last time we came out, like, 3 weeks after Becoming by Michelle Obama. And so we could never get, we did well. We never got the top spot on these charts. We were always number two at the top. That was our peak. And then we were strategizing for this, and we're like, oh, maybe this time. But yeah, so we were hoping that maybe, you know, Michelle Obama's book isn't out, that we would have a chance at the top spot. And then we found out, like, I forget when we found out like 2 months ago or something like that, that Michelle has another book out and she's coming out 3 weeks ahead of us, the same exact schedule. And so, you know, we didn't know how that would affect us, but you know what? We topped her this time.
And welcome back to The Writer Files. I am your host, Kelton Reed, wishing you pages, patience, and perseverance per usual. Award-winning indie journalist and author Adam Skolnick returned to discuss the virus of dissatisfaction, writing for modern-day samurai David Goggins, and their latest journey to bestseller with Never Finished, the sequel to a best-selling memoir. Never Finished, Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within is the follow-up to Can't Hurt Me, David Goggins' smash-hit memoir. It's been described as a tour of David's mental lab, where he developed the philosophy, psychology, and strategies that enabled him to learn that what he thought was his limit was only his beginning, and that the quest for greatness is unending. Adam's an award-winning independent journalist and author covering adventure sports, environmental issues, and civil rights for outlets such as The New York Times, Outside, ESPN, BBC, and Men's Health, among others. Adam's also the co-author of One Breath, has narrated David Goggins' best-selling audiobooks, and co-hosts the Rich Roll podcast on the Roll On Edition. In part three of this file, Adam and I discussed how the sequel to a memoir hit number one on Amazon and Audible its first week. Battling Michelle Obama once again, the pressure of publishing a follow-up to a longtime bestseller, Goggins grad school and the pursuit of greatness, why ghostwriters need to stay out of the way, be a servant to the story, and a lot more. This is the last episode of the year, but we'll be back soon with more inspiration from your favorite authors. Happy holidays. Stay calm and write on. And don't forget, you can always support this show by heading to writerfiles.fm, where you can also sign up for email updates, get links to merch, and other resources for writers. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click follow to automatically see new interviews in your podcatcher as soon as they're published, and drop us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you tune in to help other writers find us. You're on. You're on The Writer Files.
Hey, here I am. If I have to mute and cough, please forgive me.
Okay.
I've had a pretty mellow morning with this non-virus virus that I have until we started talking.
All right. Well, I can't wait to pick your brain once again. And this is the third part of our How to Ghostwrite a Bestseller series. Did you know that?
No. Is that what this is? I thought we were just catching up.
You didn't know I was recording a podcast?
Wait, this is a podcast?
Welcome to podcast.
Oh, now, how awkward. How awkward for us. How awkward for the listeners right now.
You've stumbled into a very awkward situation.
Yes, yes, yes. I've always had that talent.
What's going on over there? You're in Los Angeles, California.
I am. I'm in my dark hole. of The Office. Nothing, you know, we're to be honest, Kelton, I don't think this is like, does anyone care? But like, you know, it's cold and flu season and we got a wave came through and wreaked havoc on the house. So kind of getting tossed in the seas, but it's not COVID. I've tested 3 times. Although one of the tests, the doctor's office wouldn't let me in the building. So that worried me. When you can't go see your doctor when you're sick. Something has happened now, like sick people aren't allowed to go to the doctor because you might get other people sick. So does the doctor only see well people now? I can't figure it out.
Yeah, it's weird. Because you can get a video conference with the doctor, but how are they going to actually diagnose you that way?
I want my lymph nodes palpated. You know what I mean? I mean, I've got the sore throat. I'd like someone to palpate me.
I don't know. It's sure to lead to a raft of worse illnesses.
Right. It's like you can't go in. Like I went in to check in. They're like, you have to go out of the building. I'm like, okay. The nurse will come through this back door over here. Wait outside. I'm like, outside in the hall? No, out of the whole building. Oh, okay. So I waited out in the cold for the nurse to like
getting sicker.
The nurse wouldn't even swab my nose for me. I had to do my own self swab. I'm like, isn't this what I just did at home twice? Yeah, but listen. You know, it's tough on everybody. This stuff, we're figuring it out as we go.
Okay, we're not disparaging the healthcare industry. We're really not.
No, definitely not. Show.
No,
definitely not.
These are frontline workers, heroes.
I'm a backline worker. That's what I am. I'm in the back.
Back of the line.
Yeah, no, I'm not necessarily. I'm like the back line guy. Like, you can count on me, but first you have to go through a few layers to get to me.
I'll be there in times of need. Just leave a message and
try some other people first. But if you really desperately need me, I'll be there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Once I get around to checking my voicemail, which I check once a week.
Yeah, if you can find me. Yes. The only people that call me now are like contractors, salespeople, or like, you know what I mean? Like you're on these lists, you know, like we're a national contracting company. We'd like to come and give you a free estimate. Oh, that would be great. I mean, if I need contracting done, wouldn't I have called for an estimate from somebody? It's like those people in Europe that are like selling microwave ovens on the street. It's like, if I want a microwave oven, I'm not just going to happen upon like a plaza in Vienna.
I'm probably just going to go on Amazon.
Yes,
or right. Go to Bed Bath & Beyond.
See, these are the people that the internet has put out of business. I feel bad.
People in Vienna?
Yeah, the street hawkers of Vienna.
The barkers of Vienna?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, it's a terrible thing. I blame Jeff Bezos.
Vienna, by the way, for anyone's listening, low rents, gorgeous city, not the best weather, but spectacular city, and very low rent, and good, I think that even dads get like 6 months to a year of paternity leave.
I like that.
So writers, artists, if you're listening, Vienna.
Writers should consider Vienna as a destination.
Yes, I'm just saying it's affordable. I can't do it because I need to be near an ocean, but it's an awesome place.
Okay. Why are we here? Yeah, so this is the third installment of How to Ghostwrite a Bestseller with Adam Skolnick, our itinerant bad penny.
Yes.
Is that a thing?
Is this my sixth appearance or something like that?
It's got to be at least six.
You're like, you were literally interviewing A-list writers and yet you still let me come on. I feel very, very touched.
I want to talk about what you've been up to, and you've been keeping pretty busy. I know that the tridemic has slowed you down a little bit, but what are you working on? I mean, obviously we're going to get to the elephant in the room, which is this latest David Goggins installment titled Never Finished, Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within. Congratulations, because I understand the book has topped some charts already.
Yeah. Number one on Amazon after the first week. So number one, most sold. Last time we came out like 3 weeks after Becoming by Michelle Obama. And so we could never get, we did well. We never got the top spot on these charts. We were always number two at the top. That was our with our peak. And then we were strategizing for this, and we're like, oh, maybe this time. But yeah, so we were hoping that maybe, you know, Michelle Obama's book isn't out, that we would have a chance at the top spot. And then we found out, like, like I think I forget when we found out like 2 months ago or something like that, that Michelle has another book out and he's coming out 3 weeks ahead of us, the same exact schedule. And so, you know, we didn't know how that would affect us, but you know what? We topped her this time.
Congratulations. That's pretty exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That's very cool. And a well-deserved win for the team. Obviously, you worked very hard and for many, many months or years even.
Yeah.
On this second memoir, and it's quite a feat.
Thank you.
You know, we have talked about the entire process, really. We got permission from David after the first book came out. It was kind of an exclusive for us because it was really kind of a transparent look at the process of ghostwriting. So we got to talk right. about it at length.
Sometimes ghostwriters are prohibited from being able to disclose stuff like this, but David isn't feeling like that. So
absolutely. Yeah. So a great boon for writers. I think we got to revisit the first two episodes of How to Ghostwrite a Bestseller. And just a recap, here's what we talked about, you know, basically how you got tapped to ghostwrite for the fantastic author, endurance athlete, David Goggins, and you know, how he had turned down a major book deal and decided to self-publish, which initially seemed kind of crazy. But of course, yeah. The Joe Rogan effect for authors had kind of played a piece in that. And then, right. You know, how you got kind of pulled into the whole deal and then wrote the book, and that unique process between the research and drafting process that went into the book. And then obviously the timing played a big role, that really amazing audio podcast hybrid media that you did for the first book that topped the charts for Audible, right?
It never topped the charts. It was always number two to Michelle, because which made sense because it was Michelle Obama's, like, the first book was her memoir, which is her great life story. So this book is different than that. So that first book was kind of its own lightning bolt. And so we were kind of chasing that. And so, no, we never did make it to the top. So this time, though, when the audiobook came out, which is patterned in the exact same way, but I think even better in terms of bringing extra content, I narrate it. And then in between the chapters, I interview David. And at one point, David takes on the mic and interviews another person. He actually interviews his mother, which, if you know David's story, is pretty significant and it's pretty moving. We just even made it even better. Kind of the interstitial content is there, so it's a couple of hours of extra content that you get on the audio. And this time we did debut number one on Audible, so this is the first time we were able to get there on both sides.
Amazing.
Yeah.
A double whammy there for the team. And then you would just kind of, you know, you were talking about how this is the golden age for ghostwriting opportunities.
That's true.
For authors that are interested in that, obviously, it's a very interesting path. And a noble one, I believe. I think our final takeaway on the last episode was just why there's really no finish line for writers. And I always go back to that Hemingway quote, you know, how we're all apprentices in a craft where no one ever really becomes a master. And I think that kind of dovetails nicely into David's kind of overall message and ultimately the latest. But I don't know. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you're feeling at this moment now that kind of, I don't know, is the pressure off now that this second book has outperformed the first book in a sense?
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how it does long term, but it starts off with more sales, which you'd expect because the first book did really well. So then you expect the second book to have that initial burst. We'll see how it lasts, but we are really pleased with it. I mean, I think the pressure that we felt that the pressure is there when you're trying to write basically essentially what is a sequel to a hit, right? And that's not something I'd had any experience in. It's not something David had any experience in. Basically, it was new territory. And David wanted it to be better than Can't Hurt Me. That's always what he said from the very beginning, 2 years ago, when we sat down and we started to do this, you know, started to begin this process, which was, I'm ready to start thinking about a second book. I'm ready to bring you back in. Let's figure out what that would be. He had already done a lot of brainstorming. He had a lot of pages. He does more handwritten pages, and he had already a lot of pages and was ready to start kind of working it out. And so we beat it out and figured out what would a book look like. And it took, you know, a handful of interviews to kind of, I say interviews, but meetings, just to sit down and hash it out. And you were privy to some of that because you were helping us with audio. At one point, we thought maybe we would do even something like kind of quilt these sessions that we have and put those in the audiobook. But that turned out to be, you know, that wasn't going to work because we didn't exactly know what we wanted to say yet. And yeah. But you remember that you were helping us do that.
Yeah, that was an honor.
Yeah. And then so that was the process. That was the beginning. And this time it was a little different. Last time, it was his life story. So it was his first 45, you know, 44 years of life, 43 years of life. Yeah, 43, I think. Yeah. And, you know, he had told a lot of those stories on podcasts. I'd heard them even before I started to work with him. And so it was kind of set out what the book would be because he had these touchstones through his life that were great stories. This time it was different. You know, we didn't have the same, it wasn't laid out so clearly to us. Yeah, there was stuff he was doing over the last 4 years, and that's all in the book. You know, new athletic achievements, injuries he had to overcome, but he also kind of unpacks his philosophy in a deeper way. So the way he puts it is the first book, Can't Hurt Me, is like Goggins 101. The second book is Goggins Graduate School. And in, you know, for writers out there, David Sedaris is so great at unpacking his life story. David has that same, I know it sounds like a crazy comparison, but David is just as good at getting into his life and telling it in a way that is poignant today. And so he unpacks episodes from his kind of brutal upbringing and other episodes of his life. He unpacks stuff that he remembers from his military training. So all kind of the same stuff that's in Can't Hurt Me. A lot of the same things that people loved about it are here and never finished, but it's just in a more mature, more refined, but also still pretty raw way. It's refined just in terms of intellectually, it's less of an intro and more of a philosophical book. And so, you know, the way I look at it is it's almost like, I think of it Sedaris, and I also think of kind of like those, you know, it's almost like it's a memoir from the last American samurai. I mean, this is a guy who, you know, in this book, he runs 200 plus mile races 3 times. On a partially torn ACL. He runs across the state of Florida. He aspires to get back into special forces type work. He becomes a paramedic. All these kinds of things that like he doesn't have to do, he keeps going. And it starts with basically he's kind of losing it. He has a health scare and he realizes he's going a little soft, which to him is like the worst. And he has to get it back. And so he needs to try to reconnect with that kind of inner beast. And that's what the whole book's, that's where it really starts to take off. So it really is a philosophical kind of meditation on how to get to your truest self, how to lead a life of adventure, service, and that the job itself of evolution, the job as a human being is never over, never finished. So that's really the book in a nutshell. And yeah, it's a pleasure to write.
Yeah. You know, I kind of had asked you this in our last series about, you know, how it had affected you personally, like had it given you a different mindset yourself, you know, had it right. Changed your mindset. And you were talking about coming to things a little bit more open-minded.
Yes. And that approach helped with this because, you know, that was my takeaway from the first collaboration. And this time I did maintain that all the way throughout. I was open. I didn't have any boundaries on the process, and the process was different because the first book, he'd already done all the things that we had put in Can't Hurt Me. The second book, he was in a process of doing all these things. So it was changing. It was fluid. It got to the point where we thought we were almost done with 6 weeks to go, just had one more chapter to write. And it was based on what he was doing at the time. And then actually someone who was in the book in kind of a heavy way decided not to be in it anymore. It was just a personal decision, didn't want the notoriety, whatever it was. I don't know. It's his own decision. So we honored that and we pulled him out and we didn't even think a second, but that required us to rewrite about four chapters while he's doing this intense thing that I don't want to spoil. But while he's doing this intense thing, I'm writing all day. We're talking all night. And, you know, he's getting about 5 hours of sleep doing basically working this double to these two jobs at the same time. And it was like, you know, 11-hour days, 7 days a week for almost 6 weeks. And we rewrote the whole book. And people won't know that. And the only reason I'm even sharing that here, I would never share it on a general podcast, but I think for writers, it's interesting. Because what comes out of it is such a better, stronger book. You know, it's such a stronger book. And the resistance is there. You don't want to have to do that work. You all know what that has to be like. I mean, you know, that's heavy to go back in. The book lift. That is working. It wasn't like the other version wasn't working. It was working. And there was a lot of great stuff in it. This is so much better. It's like five times better. And it's without that last change and the willingness to do it, we wouldn't have achieved his goal, which is to write a better book. It just wouldn't have happened.
That's really interesting. And not something you hear writers talk about very often, having to go back and radically change a book, but then having it turn out better. But, you know, I mean, I guess that makes sense from an editorial process. If you are, you know, just a lone author, say, and you run into, I don't know, what, I guess maybe if you're writing a deeply researched piece of nonfiction, and then a piece of your research kind of, you know, gets fact checked by legal and turns out to be...
Right.
You know, like
right. No,
one of the you know, keystones of your argument happens to just kind of fall out of your.
But you're right. That would seldom make a better book. Right. I mean, right. I had it where with one breath, Natalia Molchanova died when we were through copy edit or almost. Yeah, we had gotten through copy edit and she died. Like, so once you get through copy edit, as writers know, that's way past the time to change anything. But I had to do it. So we figured out a way to do it in a way that didn't add any. You know, that didn't mess with layout, really. It's hard to do, but we did it in a minimal way because you had to do it. But that didn't impact make it a better book or not. I'd say two things to it in this regard. One is, in this case, maybe it's a special case because even though we started working 2 years ago, I would say it took a full year to get to the point where I was writing in his voice as effectively as I did in Can't Hurt Me. So for whatever reason, it took me about a full year to track and fully think like him. And if you can't think like your collaborator as a ghostwriter, it's harder to write like them. You can echo it, you can get to some facsimile, but it won't feel authentic to them. And if it doesn't feel authentic to them, it's going to feel like a flawed piece of work to them. And if the collaborator, the author, because I'm not the author, right? I'm the ghostwriter. So for my job, I like to think this time, my real job was to stay out of the way. You know, that was what I told myself. Stay out of the way. You know, don't make this about in any way about you. Don't try to put your point of view. You know, it's not that I'm not, my effort wasn't there. It's that I wanted to try to be as pure a channel as possible for David. And so maybe that's part of the reason I was kind of being a little more passive potentially. I don't know what it was, but like somewhere around this time last year, I started to track. He noticed it. It wasn't even something I noticed that much, but he started to feel it. And so then it started to click for him. And so what that ended up happening was once he saw chapters coming back to him like that, because what we would do is we'd brainstorm, I'd write a chapter, I'd send it back to him. He would add to it, whether it be margin notes, text to me, whatever, in many different ways. He would write stuff and put it in the margins and then we would talk through it. Whatever it was, the versions he was getting back from me were tracking with exactly where he wanted it to be. And so Once that happened, like chapter four or five, I think it was chapter five. Once chapter five came back to him and he saw that level, he's like, we have to go back and rewrite chapter one, two, three, four. So in some ways, we didn't even start writing the book until this time last year. And then we had that whole thing happen in the early spring and had to then do this emergency kind of rewrite. But because the first year was kind of trying to get there, and then the last, you know, 6 months was actually doing it, it kind of was good in a way. Does that make sense? Like, yeah, it was totally. I was primed for it. So it was like the timing of that really worked out well. And so that's it. But you know, I don't think it's that different as a ghostwriter versus if you're writing your own novel or if you're writing a piece of nonfiction or whatever it is. A lot of writers, you know, we want to be a writer because we want to say what we have to say. We want to express ourselves. And there's a certain amount of ego in that. But ultimately, to be really good at this, you are a servant to the story. And so a ghostwriter is just another version of being a servant to the story. It's really a service job, but, you know, servant to the story.
Hmm. Yeah. Staying out of the way.
Yeah.
And being a servant to the story. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. And I think with your background in journalism, you know, it would track that you would be able to do that with so much experience, but then also to be able to inhabit his voice, I guess it makes sense that it would really take some time and some effort, and then seeing, you know, a certain amount of adversity, but being able to stay the course kind of engenders this philosophy that you're continually exploring, I think, with David, right?
Yeah, for sure. And then to be a witness to what he ended up doing.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say this time I came out of it even more, you know, like I always come out of working with David as a better writer and a better human being. I really believe that. And I know it sounds like, why would you believe me? I was his ghostwriter. So of course I'm going to say that, but it is true. I feel like, you know, he is a special human being here to show us how much more we can all do and be and evolve into. And it's not to say that you have to change and you have to become, he's not even saying you have to get into athletics or become a great endurance athlete. That's not even what it's about at all. It's about peeling back the layers, figuring out who you are. And if you're going to be the maximum version of yourself, if you're going to, and that doesn't mean get the most stuff at all. That's not David at all. It means being willing to be the beginner. It means picking up new skills. It means never stop becoming, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And that goes back to some of what we had touched on, I think, also that, you know, well, I had asked, you know, is he like a modern day Stoic?
Right.
Or a Which samurai? He is, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I call it samurai because I know, you know, the Eastern wisdom is there, but he's from a Western end of it. And, but yeah, I mean, it's 100% there. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, that's what ultra running is anyway, right? It's this doorway to suffering, and the suffering reveals who you are, right? So that's no different than stuff you've seen in martial arts or the marathon monks in, I think it was, is it Tibet or Japan, something like that, like the Zen monks that run a marathon a day. You know, it's the same idea. Or long meditation, you get to the point where it's hard to keep going or almost impossible. But it's in that you find the gems, and you can deepen your understanding of yourself.
Yeah, and self-mastery seems to be at an all-time low. Well, I mean, is it a dying, like, is this a dying philosophy? Is it, or is it just this time in history? Because, you know, you guys talk about, and David talks about the virus of dissatisfaction and you know, kind of like how we're all faced with this ridiculous FOMO. But in truth, it's like, how do you compete with that? You know, how do you, you know, how does a message like this really break through the into the mind of a TikToker, you know, who's you know, continually plugged into an endless, infinite stream of, you know, like just mindless entertainment?
David would say that it's never been easier to be great because so many people are content in mediocrity, whether that's because they are clicking on their phones too much or whatever it may be, too comfortable, like the video games, whatever it is. They're not pushing themselves. So it's, if you decide to push yourself, it's so much easier to be great. And so I think there's a certain amount of truth to that. I do think that, I mean, he has a huge following, right? So the first book sold 4.5 million. This book is going to sell, you know, we don't know, but it should sell over 1 million early on, and then we'll see how it does. But so that's a lot of people that care, right? That's a lot of people that are trying to, you know, just get better, whatever that might mean for them. Because you wouldn't read this book out of just, I mean, you might as a voyeur, but I think the idea of these books is it's going to light a fire to do something. It's going to affect your life in some way, we hope. And so one concept in the books is kind of about how leadership doesn't have to, you don't have to be the boss to be a leader. And that, I think, is what we hope germinates. You know, you don't have to be the boss. You don't have to be the teacher. You don't have to be, I mean, you can be rank and file and through your example, be a leader. And that example might be an example of humility or kindness or strength or whatever it might be, goodness, whatever that means to you. You know, that is, I think, the one of the main points of the book. And we're all examples anyway. So why not put some intentionality to it? You know, every opportunity, every time you have an interaction is an opportunity to be the person you want to be, right? I mean, and often we fail. Like, you know, you snap at a robocaller or you know what I mean? You just lose it. And you don't always succeed in that leadership component, but then sometimes you do. And having spent all that time with David, I find myself doing it more often than not, like seizing that moment to say something at the right time. I try, you know, I don't get in the way. I don't put my nose in someone else's business. But if something comes up and you can be of service in that moment, the idea is to seize that. And so that's something that we talk about in the book, or comes up in the book. And so hopefully that changes it. I think in regards to the pandemic, that had a lot to do with this virus of dissatisfaction, right? There was the virus of COVID and there was a virus of dissatisfaction. It was already pre-COVID that was already happening, but I think COVID made it worse. And, you know, we don't really dwell on the pandemic in Never Finish, but obviously it happened over the last 4 years. So it's in there, and it's in there in a way that Goggins treated it, which is like, listen, the pandemic made it very clear that this is all very fragile, but I knew it was fragile already. Right. So I was equipped to deal with it in a way that I dealt with it, but it didn't railroad my life in any significant way. But a lot of people, it did, you know. He was lucky. There was no illness in his family and all of that. So there's fortune there too. But a lot of people kind of got their minds scrambled by it in a way that wasn't necessary. And he took a very stoic approach, was I'm going to do me. I'm not going to get involved in all the rest of it. I'm going to do me. I'm not going to make noise. Now, you and I came up as activists. So that's like, you know, if we were our younger selves when this is all happening, maybe we would have been in the streets too. And now being as an older, like looking at it more from the samurai philosophy, I look at it and be like, no, you know, I don't know what changed in the streets, you know, whether you're fighting against mask protocols or you're fighting for them or all the rest that happened. Ultimately, evolution is a personal experience. So. Mm-hmm. At least that's kind of the point that comes across in this book.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I thank you for all of your, candor and obviously for sharing the journey with us. And I'd love to have you back obviously to talk about more stuff, but, this is a great way to wrap up, I think, this, series, because again, the latest by David Goggins, and obviously its writer, Adam Skolnick, Never Finished, Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within. We'll drop a link to that, your home base there, and all the other resources that we have shared in this series. Adam is at adamskolnick.com. You can connect to all his socials. But yeah, I wanted to say before, just like when I saw the blurbs by Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
And Joe Rogan.
There's all these guys that are fans of David's. And so I think at one point they offered to do something, but in the end, David just did he promoted it on Joe Rogan's podcast. He did one more sit down with Joe, and that's all he's done so far. So just stuff on his own channel on Instagram, you know, obviously he's promoting it, but no, he didn't do any celebrity kind of stuff. You know, The Rock approached him and asked if he could help in some way. He'd heard about the book. And so that's how that happened. You know, and so, but no, David didn't ask it for anything beyond, you know, people coming to him, and in the end didn't do any collabs with celebrities, because in some ways it's kind of the antithesis, right? I mean, it's great that people appreciate his point of view, but it's not why he does it. And so it might have just twisted the message.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Well, it comes through.
But I have a question for you.
Oh yeah. Go ahead.
Don't you have a spinoff podcast in the works?
I do. TK, but, I'll let listeners know about that when it's closer to ready to be.
TK,
baby.
You're going to learn a whole new side of Kelton Reed.
Yeah. And you may not like it, but that's okay.
You may not like it, but he'll still be himself on the Writer Files. So
thanks for that teaser. All right. We got very little time here. We got about 4 minutes. Yeah, I don't know. Again, never finished Unshackle Your Mind, Win the War Within. Goggins takes you inside his mental lab where he developed the philosophy, psychology, and strategies that enabled him to learn that what he thought was his limit was only his beginning, and that the quest for greatness is unending. And in truth, I mean, he's been through so much adversity, and done it with such grace. And I don't know, it's really an inspiring message. I think ultimately, you come away, at least I do, with just a kind of a hope for humanity.
You know what I think of it? Like, remember how you and I were super into the Carlos Castaneda books?
Yeah.
Back in the day?
Sure.
And it was like, because it had, you know, those were fiction, but they had a lot, there was a message there for us almost that we took and enlivened our lives. And so when I was finishing this book, I thought about that too. So, you know, I thought about the Castaneda books, I thought about Sedaris, and I thought about, you know, I thought about all of that. You know, so it's interesting. You wouldn't think that, right? Writing this type, writing a book about someone like David, that it would go there. But that just shows me the kind of corner of literature he's carving out. And he really is. You know, he's got these two books. I don't believe he's done. Obviously, the title's never finished. There probably will be more. And and he's, you know, he's carved out something that's unique. And he's doing it independently published. And this is just unheard of shit. So I'm happy to be along for the ride.
Yeah. Well, congrats on your successes, and obviously huge kudos to David and the team. A boot camp for your brain. You know, there's a part of me that thinks that there's a spiritual element to it that will be, you know, I don't know, that he'll delve further into. And I start to get that sense that it's that his evolution obviously is a pretty important one, and yeah, a truly remarkable human.
I'll pass it along.
Yeah, and you're a truly remarkable human. one of my faves.
Thank you. Right back at you, Kelton Reed.
Thanks so much for joining us for this file. And if you're a fan of the show, simply head over to writerfiles.fm for more. That's writerfiles.fm.